Major funding for On Point is provided by Liberty Mutual for all your auto, home, life, and business insurance needs. Liberty Mutual. Responsibility. What's your policy?
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Rap star Chris Brown could face serious jail time for his alleged attack on superstar singer-girlfriend Rihanna. The shocking details made headlines.
Rihanna actually suffered severe bruising to her face. She was smashed in the jaw, and in fact, she had bite marks on her arm.
Not to mention put in a headlock and choked until she almost lost consciousness. Chris Brown's 19. Rihanna's just 21. They're in the celebrity spotlight, but this isn't just a celebrity problem. Domestic violence counselors report widespread relationship violence among young Americans. This hour on Point, we'll ask why and what it may take to stop the cycle of abuse. You can join the conversation. Why isn't this problem fading? What would you say to Rihanna, to Chris Brown, if you had the chance? Is their story your story of abuse? And young listeners, what's going on in your crowd? What keeps this going? If you're a young American and don't know Rihanna, I don't know what you've been listening to. She's all over the place. Here's her 2008 single, Take a Bow.
Don't tell me you're sorry, 'cause you're not. And baby, when I know you're only sorry you got caught. But you put on quite a show, really had me going, but now it's time to go. Curtains finally closing. That was
Rihanna, 2008,
show.
Take a Bow, out of Barbados. She's beautiful, she's all over the place. On her way, or the night before, the Grammys, in a Lamborghini with her boyfriend, things got really, really bad. Her boyfriend, Chris Brown. Chris Brown's single, Forever, from his 2008 re-release album Exclusive Forever Edition. Here's a bit of that song. Originally created for a Double Mint gum commercial, it hit number 2 on the Billboard Hot 100. The perfect couple, the pop world thought, until her face was flashed all over the world, beaten and bloody, after that night in the Lamborghini. We're going to look at what happened there and what's going on with young Americans and relationship violence in this hour. Joining me now from Los Angeles is Sandy Banks, columnist for the Los Angeles Times. Readers responded in droves to her essay, Chris Brown and Rihanna, A Lesson for Teens. You can link to the column at our website, onpointradio.org. She's also the mother of 3 daughters of her own, 18, 20, and 23, with opinions of their own about the case. Sandy Banks, thanks very much for being with us.
Thanks for having me, Tom.
And with me in the studio is Lisa Hartwick, director of the Center for Violence Prevention and Recovery at the Beth Israel Deaconess Medical Center in Boston. Lisa Hartwick, thanks very much for joining us.
Hi, Tom. Thank you for having me.
Sandy, what did you think when you first heard this story?
Well, I was horrified because they did present themselves as kind of the perfect couple. But like a lot of people, we first heard Chris Brown hit Rihanna. And it wasn't until we saw the pictures and got the affidavit that we realized that it was not a hit. It was not I got mad and punched you. It was a full-on beating. And I wanted to punch Chris Brown in the nose, basically. Mm. I mean, it shook up kind of the idea of who these people are and what goes on behind closed doors. And it also made me think and made my daughters think, too, that this could be anybody. If it could happen to Rihanna, it could happen to anybody.
Your daughter's 18, 20, 23. Chris Brown, 19 years old, now facing 2 felony counts of assault and making criminal threats. How did your daughters take this on board? I mean, I read your column. They were sweet on these stars.
Well, oh yes. Chris Brown's picture's on one of my girls' wall, and he's such a handsome, clean cut guy. He's like the anti rapper.
Mm-hmm.
And Rihanna is a fashion star, and she's so cute, and she's so little, and they call her the princess. So it was hard to believe. It was hard to digest, and particularly when the extent of the violence came out. But it sparked some good conversations where I discovered that at least one of my daughter's friends has been in a similar situation. And this is a kid from a middle-class home, gated community, 2 professional parents, college student. And And she was, you know, quote, hit by her boyfriend and went back to him and is still with him. And you know, the abuse seems to be escalating. So it was a real kind of wake-up call, I think, for the girls. But what was interesting to me, too, was the first thought was that Rihanna must have provoked him. What did she do? It was harder to believe that Rihanna would be beaten. It was harder to believe that Chris Brown would do this than it was to believe that Rihanna would be beaten. And that's the reaction I got from in a lot of emails from young people who just couldn't believe he's much too cute. He's much too clean cut. He's a good dancer. He's a nice guy. It couldn't have happened, or she must have provoked it.
But we all saw that face. I mean, that was really a victim in that photograph.
Well,
was,
you know, and even when the pictures came out, one of my daughters, in fact, all of them kept saying, oh, I feel so sorry for her. It's so humiliating. It's so embarrassing for her. It was the pictures kind of really brought it home. But even still, the feeling was that this was a burden that Rihanna has to carry rather than Chris Brown. Mm. And so that sparked a lot of discussion about why should she be embarrassed for being a victim?
A lot of people are talking about what should happen now and taking these lessons into their own homes and lives, looking for teaching moments here. Celebrities weighing in on this. Sandy, here's Oprah on Friday with a pretty stern warning for Rihanna.
Love doesn't hurt. And if a man hits you once, he will hit you again.
That's right. Yeah.
He will hit you again.
Oprah there, what's the verdict of your daughters, 18, 20, 23? Are they saying, Rihanna, get out of there, or something else, Sandy?
Well, they're saying, Rihanna, get out of there. And I think, you know, I'm coming slowly to that idea. It's hard for me to close the door on somebody at 19. Chris Brown apparently grew up in a home where his stepfather abused his mother, and he's talked about that before. And apparently, if you believe what you read in the celebrity magazines, Rihanna also grew up in a home where she witnessed abuse and her father had an addiction problem. So I think the background of these two kids has kind of shaped what happens. But what I'm trying to talk to my daughters about, I hate for the discussion to be, do you go back?
Right.
That the discussion has to be, how did it get to this point? And the domestic violence counselors that I talked to made a real point of saying that what we have to be teaching girls and boys is not so much, you know, here's the checklist and here's what you do when it happens, but how do you build a healthy relationship that doesn't involve abuse? What do you recognize? And what I'm trying to talk to my girls about now is get to know a boy and where he comes from. What's his family like? Get to know his family, because, you know, that is a danger sign. If this is a family that doesn't correspond with what you think is healthy, then you need to take a closer look. And to not, you know, kids are so emotional, and young love is so emotional, and it's so dramatic. And there's a lot of, you know, fighting over jealousy and how come you were with your friends and what did you do? I'm trying to teach them about ratcheting the drama down. We just yesterday, my youngest
daughter. Hard when you're 19 or 20
exactly.
or 21, it's all about drama.
My 18-year-old had a fight with her boyfriend yesterday about he's going camping with his friends on the weekend and you don't spend enough time. And she put all of his stuff in a bag and was going to rush over to his house and throw it on the steps. And I had to talk her back in and say, hold on. You know, this is the very kind of thing that leads you to into an event that can be uncontrollable. Take a deep breath. Don't escalate the situation.
Everybody chill a little bit.
Chill a little bit, right. And also to set your boundaries. I think what Oprah says makes a lot of sense. If something, be clear on what you're going to tolerate in a relationship before it happens and conduct yourself in a way that makes that clear to the other person, because once they scream at you and call you a name, they've crossed a boundary.
Yeah. Sandy
the
Banks,
next time they grab your arm, you know, and then they hit you.
Right. And then, well, we hope not, but it does happen, and it happens a lot. Sandy, with the LA Times, stand by there in LA for a moment. Lisa Hartwick is with me in the studio. Lisa, here's what gets my attention. I mean, this is a big story in the pop celebrity world. Everybody's talking about it. But here is pretty fresh data from the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention's Youth Risk Behavior Surveillance saying that violence among 9th to 12th graders who say that they've been hit, slapped, or physically hurt on purpose by their boyfriends or girlfriends within the last 12 months is 9.9%, an all-time high. We have now been talking about domestic abuse, domestic violence, relationship violence for a generation. And it just strikes me so hard that this apparently is not going down. It's going strong. Why?
That's right. I mean, I think one of the issues that we need to look at is that we've basically focused our attention mostly on adults. And I think despite the fact that we've been thinking about kids in different areas, I think teen dating violence and domestic violence, really kids don't relate to. They're not married to somebody.
Mm-hmm.
They're not those people.
Right.
Who,
they're not domestic, for heaven's sakes. They're young and wild and wannabe.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly. So teen dating violence is a newer term, hopefully to capture really the essence of what happens with teens, which is that they're learning about relationships. They're learning how to be with each other. We learn that from, you know, lots of areas. We learn it from the media. We learn it from our parents. We learn it from families.
Lisa, is Oprah right? If a man hits you once, he will hit you again. Is that right?
Well, I think, interesting, I love Oprah, but I don't necessarily like what she says to survivors and of domestic violence. And I think the reason is she seems to put a lot of onus on the person who is being abused versus the perpetrator. And, I'd like that to shift a little, where we look at Chris Brown and say, you really need to be in a batterer's intervention program. You need really serious, focused attention.
But the onus she's putting on the one who's hit is saying, get out of there.
Yes.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about a new generation of relationship violence. Young American men, young American women, and violence. Right in the middle of too many relationships, we're asking why, after all these years, a generation and more now, where this has been a very public subject of conversation. We've been joined from Los Angeles by Sandy Banks, a columnist for the LA Times. Her column, Chris Brown and Rihanna, A Lesson for Teens, has generated a huge web response. You can read it at our website, onpointradio.org. And with me in the studio is Lisa Hartwick, director for the Center for Violence Prevention and Recovery at the Beth Israel Deaconess Medical Center in Boston. Let's get our listeners in right here, right now. Jennifer in Hamden, Connecticut. Jennifer, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. How are you?
Good. What do you know, Jennifer?
Well, you know, the first thing I want to say is I'm a little older. I'm 26. But when I was in college, one of my best girlfriends had a similar situation. And after all the attention of getting the cops involved and everything, you know, we were really surprised how that she went back. You know,
she went back. She suffered physical abuse and she went back.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. I mean, it was horrible. I mean, we had holes in our apartment. It was crazy. I mean,
holes in the walls.
I guess. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. That doesn't sound good.
Yeah, it was not good at all.
So, what did you take away from it all, Jennifer? What's going on here?
One problem is that a lot of young people, we tend to be a lot more harsh with our words, physical as well as verbal abuse. You know, it just becomes a part of our relationships almost. And with the Rihanna and Chris Brown situation, you have to realize that not only are they young, but they're also living a very adult life. They're out there. They're on the road. They might cater to a teenage crowd, but they're in adult situations with adults that have been in that industry for years. And as a result, you know, they live this adult lifestyle where they're able to live together and travel together by themselves and have this very adult relationship without their parents and families really involved.
So, but you say a more physical and verbal abuse among young Americans. Why would that be, Jennifer?
Well, one thing is that what we see, we don't see a lot of examples of positive relationships anymore. How many two-parent families do we even see? How many women really wait and really try to get to know the men that they're loving? They have such, they're missing that male figure in their lives. So as a result, they kind of look to their boyfriends to be these parents to them almost, but also their anchors in these relationships. They're looking for these relationships that we see on TV, that we saw on the Cosby shows and, you know, and all the other shows.
And they may not have it in their lives. They need an anchor. The boyfriend may seem like he is that anchor, even when he's abusive. Jennifer, thank you for calling. Lisa Hartwick, how about it? I mean, you've been at this for a long time.
That's right.
We haven't normally put it, as you say, in terms of domestic violence when it comes to younger people, teens and early 20s, because they may not be married, don't have a household set up. But here it is. How does it make you feel, and what do you say to Jennifer's observation?
Well, I think I think that the focus generally is, and there's probably lots of reasons for it, but, you know, and I think part of it is recognizing that we have to get to the underpinnings. Why is it a gender biased issue? Why is it mostly women are being abused by men? And go back to how we think about those roles. Interestingly, I think a lot of the attention, you know, Jennifer mentioned her friend was abused and they were surprised that she went back. And, you know, I think some of the things when we sit in a closed room with survivors, some of the things we don't hear or we're not privy to is that, you know, what happens when that person leaves? I remember I actually had a college roommate when I was in college many, many years ago. And my college roommate did recognize that she was in an abusive relationship. And when she went to end the relationship, the violence escalated. So we have to sort of, you know, put that into the equation that people who are in abusive relationships, when they try to end the relationship, it isn't a no-brainer. It isn't that they're not thinking and thoughtful. Some of the dynamics that are happening are actually escalating violence, and they're very aware of that. So, again, going back to what Oprah said, she just needs to leave. That isn't bad advice necessarily, but you need to leave with support, with safety planning, with an ability to really get the people around you to support you. And the one thing that hasn't really come up yet is the fact that whether it's teen dating violence or domestic violence in older folks, what we see is that they've really been isolated from family and friends. And really the person who becomes really their lifeline is the person who's abusing them. So what we really need to do is get that support around the person who's being victimized. Friends should stick by, even if they go back once. That doesn't mean, you know, it doesn't mean that they haven't heard what's happening, and really kind of stick with them.
Sandy Banks in L.A., I mean, the thing that still I can't figure out is we've been talking about gender roles in this society now for decades. This isn't new. Everyone's been over backwards and really succeeded in raising a generation of quite strong young women. Why still this particular and very old-fashioned vulnerability? This is, you know, cavemen and clubs kind of stuff.
Well, and I think maybe you hit the nail on the head when you talk about a generation of stronger, more empowered women. Jennifer made a really good point about relationships being more verbally abusive, more coarser, meaner. And I think, you know, I look at these shows, these reality shows my girls watch on TV, where there's all this drama that the girls are screaming and throwing things and they break up and they get back together. And I think that one of the counselors I talked to talked about the violence is an extension of kind of a macho attitude among men. And in some ways, the tougher the women get, the more threatened an already insecure man can feel. And so the control begins. They talk about first he texts you all the time. Where are you? What are you doing?
Right.
And then he demands to know certain things. And so it can be an extension of control and a man feeling out of control because the woman is not the docile, you know, vulnerable kind of woman of maybe his parents' generation.
So there's
a
different kind of ratcheting up there. Stronger women. Maybe.
There's a different dynamic, between. And I think that, you know, scares some men who also don't know how to handle it. So, you know, as Lisa said, it has to be not just talking to the women, but talking to the young men about handling their own emotions and not feeling so threatened by this.
Let me get another voice here. Sandy, stand by in L.A. Candace Hopkins joins us from Austin, Texas. She's director of Love is Respect. It's a national dating abuse helpline, fields 1,000 calls a month. Candace, thanks for being here.
Hello, Tom. Thank you for having me.
What do you see going on with young Americans and relationship violence? The numbers out of the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention say there's more. Why?
Well, I think that there's more focus on it. I encourage all adults to think about when you were in high school, and you can often think about that teenage girl that you knew who stopped hanging out or came to school with bruises or marks on her. So there has been teen dating abuse for as long as we've had domestic violence. There's a much higher focus on it right now, and the methods by which you're seeing sort of teen dating abuse play out are changing, from the cell phones to the social networking sites to things like the sexting issue.
And sexting, so, sexual comments and communication by text or a cell phone. And the cell phone is almost a kind of ankle bracelet on girlfriends, like tracking them all the time, the control factor Sandy was talking about.
Definitely. Every young woman who calls our helpline or young man who is the victim of dating abuse talks about that the person who's trying to control them uses the cell phone. I mean, almost every teen has one in their back pocket, and they feel this need to answer it. And if they don't answer it, the person who they're dating, there may be consequences.
Where were you? What were you doing? Yeah. Why didn't you answer? That's a long leash.
Yeah, and it never goes away.
Mm. Let's hear from some listeners here. Swansboro, North Carolina. Teddy? Teddy, you're on the air.
Yes, hi.
Hi.
How you doing?
All right. What do you see?
Well, I see we don't punish him. We won't punish this guy. We'll give him a little fine, and that'll be it. We don't punish our criminals. The American people won't punish him. The law won't punish him. I knew a guy, a couple. He beat her all the time, and he finally ended up killing her. And he got, 7 years in prison for taking her life.
Wow.
That's it. We won't punish him.
Let us look at that. Of course, there are charges here, 2 felony counts against Chris Brown. Sandy Banks in L.A., you've written, you said if the account in the affidavit, that is the police report, is true, I think Chris Brown needs some time behind bars to repent, reflect. Do you think he'll get it, Sandy?
Well, that's a good question. And I think part of it depends on, I mean, he's got really good lawyers, so who knows. But, one thing to point out here in Los Angeles, and they call this the O.J. law, but the Los Angeles police, if there is a report of domestic violence or any kind of a physical contact and the police are called, they have to arrest the person. It's not up to them anymore. If there's an allegation of physical abuse, the alleged abuser has to be arrested. Now, what happens after that, is doesn't always follow a straight path. But I think there is much more of an attitude of seriousness about domestic violence than there had been in the past.
Let's go to Mary in Hartford, Connecticut. Mary, you're on the air.
Hi. I had a comment. I think that it seems to me like teenagers and young people these days are much more sexually advanced than I think that I certainly was at that age. And I wonder if maybe, although they're physically more advanced, they don't have the emotional capability to deal with some of the adult situations that they put themselves in. And I'll take my comments off the air.
Yeah, thanks for calling, Mary. Candace Hopkins, Mary says, you hear they're more sexually advanced, but maybe not emotionally ready for everything that comes with that. What do you hear, Candace?
Well, we hear from young people that sort of the negotiation about the levels of intimacy are something that they'd be dealing with all the time. You know, I went so far with one boyfriend, now this boyfriend says I have to go that far with him. Where, do I have sex or don't I have sex? And They're struggling to learn how to have healthy relationships, and it's been mentioned before with your earlier guests that there's not too many role models out there about what are appropriate boundaries and when is it okay to draw a line. And so they're struggling to learn, and although we have been putting out healthy female empowerment messages, the young women who we're talking to are struggling to figure out how those compare to the other messages they're getting, that you should have sex with your boyfriend, and jealousy is actually flattering, and that you have to have a boyfriend in order to be considered popular, and all of those sort of things. And they're 16 trying to sort of put all that into play and have relationships. And at times it's very difficult.
Lisa, how do you see this sexuality and empowerment coming back to bite in a way? That's no justification whatsoever. I just wonder if it's a human dynamic.
Well, I think, one of the things that's happening right now, there's a great website called doyouask.org, and encourage listeners to go to it. And it has, really, for young people, really wonderful visuals of couples who are vibrant, attractive. You sort of want to meet these people.
Mm-hmm.
And basically saying, can I kiss you? Can I, what are we going to be doing here? And really helping people language their sexuality. So it isn't up to chance. I do think, that people do know what feels right to them. And we just need to empower youth to really listen to themselves and listen to the other messages that are happening such as doyouask.org, giving them permission. It's okay. It doesn't happen naturally. We learn these things over time.
Talk it out. Don't beat it out.
Mm-hmm.
Let's get a call from Atlanta, Georgia, and Sahara. Hi, Sahara, you're on the air.
Yes, hello.
Hello.
I wanted to talk about the symbolism that this event happened within the music industry.
Mm-hmm.
Right now, particularly in hip-hop, rap, R&B, there is a saturation of misogyny. Women in these music videos are treated as possessions.
Mm-hmm.
They are traded among one another. and they are often hit, called prostitutes. The personification of being a pimp is very popular right now.
Mm-hmm.
And I wonder if this is not being ingested by both men and women who listen to these lyrics, recite these lyrics, and it develops some type of unconscious acceptance.
Sahara, stick with us and let us look at that. Sandy Banks, what do you say?
I think that's an excellent point, and I see it in my own household where, you know, music videos tend to be on, and all you see are women writhing around, you know, half naked, and men throwing money, and you know, basically, as she said, they're treated like commodities.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it becomes that you're valuable only for the way you look and if you go along with this. So I think it programs not only men, but I think it programs young women. And think, if you're watching these from the time you're 13, by the time you're 18, your image of what you're supposed to be like is being dictated by a lot of what you see. And combine that with, you know, with the reality shows, with even things like The Bachelor and The Bachelorette, where
mm-hmm.
it's, you know, they're all one-dimensional kind of pictures of relationships
and disposable, male, female
roles.
All disposable.
And exactly, mm-hmm. all disposable. So mm-hmm. I think it's no wonder that kids are growing up confused. And when you layer on top the sexuality and you layer on top the technology, it's no wonder that they are confused.
Sahara, you sound like a young woman who's probably heard plenty of that. How do you deal with it or resist it, if that's what you do?
I actually am a little bit older. I'm 31.
Okay.
I wrote my undergraduate thesis on contemporary issues in black masculinity.
Mm-hmm.
And so I had the opportunity to interview men and study what their concepts were of women and family. And many of them had children, but were not married.
Mm-hmm.
And it was really surprising to see what they felt that their responsibilities were in the household. There was a lot of animosity towards the mothers of the children. And one caller mentioned on the breakdown of family, I think that has a lot to do with it, there is no one there to counter these images. Who's to say, you know, this is wrong, this is fiction, this is not true?
Mm-hmm.
I was strong enough and intelligent enough to avoid this type of thing. I always told any boyfriend that if he raised a hand to me, that'd be the last thing he ever did. But a lot of women feel that it is more painful to leave a relationship than it is to stay in a bad one.
Sahara, we hear that strength and the smarts right there, and we appreciate your call. Call again. Candace Hopkins, is it too easy just to point to hip-hop, or is it justified?
Well, I think that's part of it, but I think it's more than hip-hop. I think it's movies and TV and everything that's out there. And the Internet is a fabulous place, but it's also full of trash, so to speak. Even in the situation with Chris Brown and Rihanna, if you read the comments that folks are leaving on MySpaces or MTV's news articles or any of the media blogs,
mm-hmm.
the victim blaming is so severe. And the fact that young people are sort of reading these blogs as gospel.
Reading all over. Candace, hold the thought. Sandy, Lisa, we're talking about domestic violence. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back after a short break.
I can't be 16. Once I get in, you won't let go. I have the girls wishing they were you. I know you heard about me, but guess what's going down?
We're talking this hour about a new generation of relationship violence. Young men, young women, we're asking why. Everybody's seen it in the Rihanna Chris Brown story, but it doesn't end there. We've been joined by Sandy Banks. She's a columnist for the Los Angeles Times, been writing about this and getting a lot of response there, has three young daughters of her own, 18, 20, and 23. Candace Hopkins joins us from Austin, Texas. She's director of Love is Respect. It's a national dating abuse helpline. And Lisa Hartwick is with me in the studio, director for the Center for Violence Prevention and Recovery at the Beth Israel Deaconess Medical Center in Boston. Let me get a call right here from Greg in Bristol, Rhode Island. Greg, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. How are you?
All right. What do you know?
Well, maybe a different perspective. I haven't really spoken about it too much because, you know, it's an awkward situation for a male.
Okay.
But, I was in a 3.5-year relationship where I was on the other end of the abuse, pretty severe, and it was not reciprocated.
What do you mean? You were hitting or being hit?
I was being hit and pulled hair and scratched and hit with fists and slapped.
Wow. And, why did you stay in that for three and a half years?
Very good question. I was 21 at the time until I was 24. I'm 35 now. In retrospect, I think I was trying to prove something to her and prove that what love, quote, unquote, could actually be. And to myself, I suppose, I think... I really don't have an answer for it, really. I think that...
What do you think was on her mind? Why did she think she could or needed to or should do that? Hit you, hurt you?
It might have been just retribution from her past or from her upbringing. She came from a very strict home. Father, I guess, was somewhat of abusive as well. And she had been married prior, and apparently he was as well. I don't really know if that's really the case, but, you know, as far as me having an answer for why I stayed with it, I think I was just naive and trying to prove points that didn't really matter.
And what's your advice to young people in comparable situation, male or female? Try and work it out or get out?
Definitely get out. Absolutely get out. Sooner the better. It came down to a point where I didn't really have any resources, and I was recommended to the women's resource in Newport, and they actually helped me quite a bit. It was kind of a, you know, awkward, unusual case. You know, it's usually the other way around.
Right.
So I was actually designated my first cell phone ever back then, and I slept with it under my pillow just instead of a knife, you know, so I'd protect myself, you know, because, you know, fearing for your life at some point, because you never know, you know, what's going on in somebody's head, how emotionally unstable they are, what they're capable of, and they're capable of hurting somebody to the point where, you know, you see stars.
Greg, we're glad that you got out safe and alive, and you sound in a pretty good place now, and we wish you good luck. We thank you for sharing your experience there. Lisa, here, this turns it around, but of course, what matters is the violence more than the gender. It shouldn't be there.
Exactly. I mean, I think, you know, Greg reached out for resources, and as he said, sometimes it could be awkward if they're really set up for women. There are some male resources available. I know that the program that I run is open to men or women, and we try to keep it gender neutral. It's, you know, I think it sounds like he stayed in it for probably all the reasons other people do. And also when he left, it was by grabbing a resource and really getting some help. And I, you know, applaud him for that. In doing that.
Candace Hopkins in Austin, Texas. I'm looking here at these CDC numbers. 9.9% of high schoolers been hit, slapped, or physically hurt in the last 12 months by a boyfriend or girlfriend. And it's interesting. There's a pretty big variety across the country. The highest rate for any state, Georgia, 15.7%. The lowest rate for any state, Iowa, 7.2%. What do you tell people when they call in, Candace? Do you say, get out of there, get out of this relationship? What's your sort of first advice?
Well, we ask them what they would want to do. You know, for any victim who's involved in a domestic violence or teen dating abuse situation, you have to sort of allow them to make those choices and their own decisions. Otherwise, what happens isn't necessarily going to stick. And for the young people who we talk to, asking them what they want to do is sometimes the first time that someone's asked them that. They're often told what to do, whether it's a school or a parent or other things. If a young person chooses to say, our focus is then around safety planning. Can they work on altering their routes to school? Can they work on not being alone with this person if they're that afraid? And talking about then what do they expect out of the relationship if they're going to stay in it. And talking to them about what are some escalation red flags. And if they do see those, what can their next steps be? Because we are anonymous and confidential, you know, we often don't necessarily know where a young person is calling from, but we know their call from every state across the country, and we, you know, work with them to find their local resources.
And good luck to them. We hope they do. Maria is calling from Framingham, Massachusetts. Maria, you're on the air.
Hi. I think one of the issues also, having been a survivor of relationship violence when I was a young lady, when I was 18, one of the issues that I'd like to talk a little bit more about and see how this played out into the particular situation that we're talking about is substance abuse. I lived with a man. He was an alcoholic. His father was an alcoholic. Came from an upper-class family where parents were doctors, and by no means did they listen to hip-hop music, but they had this, like, really ugly family secret of alcoholism that nobody wanted to talk about. Even his mother protected him when I went to her to say, you know, this is happening to me, and she's like, oh, no, no, it's your problem. But fortunately, I came from a family where we didn't see that, where we saw, you know, mother and father being very kind to each other, being very kind to us, and brothers and sisters being very protective of one another. And it took me some time because I was actually embarrassed about what I had gotten myself into. But I went to them, and they shielded me and helped me get out. But it's not easy to get out because you do get the threats of, you know, I'm going to find you, I'm going to kill you, and it's quite scary. But you know, when you're protected and you have a network of people, whether it's family, friends, or some of the organizations that are on the show, I think that makes a really big difference.
Maria, we're glad that you got out, and it's good to be reminded of substance abuse coming in here. But I still keep coming back. Sandy, you've written about this for a long time. I mean, I'm just struck at how this, here it is, going on again. New generation, problem still there. You know, everybody who studied this sees the how modeling of parents works here and how we can be prisoners of what we've seen in our youth. But don't we ever get out of this? We've got at our website, Sandy, you know, Rex is saying, are Chris Brown and Rihanna the new Ike and Tina? Thinking back to Ike and Tina Turner, that's a long time ago. Who would have thought that we'd be back in this now, Sandy?
Well, I don't know that we ever got out of it. And I think, you know, Maria makes a really good point about she didn't grow up with this, and yet she found herself in this situation.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, what Greg was saying, too, about he just endured it. He wanted to prove something. You know, I hear a lot from young people particularly, but even older people, that you love this person, and if it's substance abuse, you try to separate. Well, that's not really him. He was just drinking. Or you hope you can love them out of it, or you feel sorry. Oh, they had this horrible background, of, you know, and so I'm going to just love him and show him a better way to love. And, you know, my daughter's friend who was in a situation, that was her case. She was had a much more stable kind of upbringing than the boyfriend, and so she just wanted to love him out of it. And I think this kind of romantic notion of love enduring and conquering all has been around, you know, since Ike and Tina and now, and it's a lot of what drives us or excuses the behavior of the abuser in our minds. And that's part of what we have to educate our children about and we have to figure out ourselves what love looks like and how do you get it, you know, how do you get to a healthy place.
Candace Hopkins, what advice do you give young people, I guess often women, about how much is too much when it comes to a boyfriend who's texting them all the time, sexting inappropriately, always tracking them on the cell phone? Do young women know when it's too much? These days people are communicating all the time, you know, tweeting and calling and texting. Do they know when they're being sort of made a prisoner?
You know, I think our most common comment we hear from young people is something just doesn't feel right. And then they're trying to figure out what to do with that feeling. So, you know, it does make them uncomfortable to have to tell somebody where they are all the time, to answer the text messages in the middle of the night, to text when they're, you know, coming out of class. And so when they call, what we work on is helping them draw that line. What can they do? Can they turn the phone off? Can they block the number if they choose? Can they keep copies of the text if they become threatening? Just to work on giving them some information to support them as they try and figure out what their next steps are going to be. And the same thing with parents. We get quite a few calls from parents, and generally their first response is, I'm just going to take the phone away.
Mm-hmm.
And we talked to them about that may make the behavior go underground. It's not uncommon for young people to use their friends' phones to text.
Of course,
so they
sure.
may not know if the situation is escalating, if there's increased violence or increased threats.
Mm-hmm.
And so we work with parents also.
The data will flow. Julie is calling from Cambridge, Massachusetts. Julie, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah.
I run the Dating Violence Intervention Program at Transition House here in Cambridge, Mass. And I just wanted to add my comments that I'm seeing a lot of the same things locally.
Mm-hmm.
That teenagers, as your guests have said, really do get a sense something is wrong, but have a very hard time trying to figure out how to set limits and how to do it safely, because they are constantly connected by cell phones, by email, by instant message, all of the ways that they can be connected. And as she just said, other folks are, they're using other technologies. If someone pushes back and says, I'm not comfortable with this, I'm going to turn off my phone for a while, or I'm going to, there are repercussions, basically, and that's very hard for people. And I also wanted to comment on an earlier,
mm-hmm.
Something someone said earlier, that as much as we are in a new era of women and girls' rights and rights for young men and young women, there's very little attention paid on how kids can do this. And there's a lot of direct messaging that says you have all these rights, but there's a lot of indirect messaging that continues to say that that girls and women are supposed to be sexual objects, they're supposed to be sexy and available, that jealousy is sexy, that violence is somehow sexy, and that's really tough to sort out when you're about 16.
So it leaves us feeling vaguely ridiculous when we say we're shocked that this is going on, when the culture is so full of that.
Yeah, we shouldn't be shocked, because it's all over, and it's saturating teen culture as well as adult culture, but hopefully as adults we have a little more ability to sort it out.
Julie, our time is running down, but I thank you for your call. Let me get one more here from Canton, New York. Eric, you're on the air, Eric.
Yes, hi.
Hi.
I just wanted to say that I was once someone who was an abuser, and I tried to get help for it. I was turned away from our local mental health clinics, and it took me actually hurting myself before someone would give me help. So there's like that whole piece of the reactive nature of services for people who are, perhaps looking for help, versus like the reactive. And
so you were an abusive boyfriend or husband who would hit, didn't know how to stop, or?
Yeah, basically. I mean, I didn't want my children to see that. So I thought, the only thing to do was to, not be around. And that was my way to do it, because I was turned away from help. And, as a result of that act, I got the help I needed, and I'm in a great place right now, and, I just don't do that type of thing. But, if they could be a little more proactive, perhaps it would ebb the flow of such behavior.
That's great advice, and we're glad you got past that, Eric. Hope you stay there. Lisa, what about guys who do this and don't want to? Where do they turn?
Yeah, well, I think that, nationally, there are betters intervention programs, which I mentioned earlier. Locally, there's Emerge, which is in Cambridge. And if you go to their website, they're a great resource. They're the first betters intervention program in the nation.
Betters intervention.
That's mm-hmm. right. Mm-hmm. And I think, it sounds like this caller really stepped up to the plate in terms of owning his behavior. And I think that's what that's the first step. It's not the last step. And I think it's an important kind of way of looking at the interventions that need to happen. I think part of it is owning the behavior, really stepping up to the plate. It sounds like this young man didn't want his children to see it, and I think it's a great takeaway message that change needs to happen in this generation, and really we don't want the next generation to see this.
Sandy, give us your good mother's advice, which you must be sharing with your 18 and 20 and 23-year-old daughters in the last couple of weeks here. What's most important in what you're telling them?
To look at the whole person, look at where they came from, how they react to little things, and how they talk to you and how they treat you, and your own role in setting a tone in a relationship. And, it's a lot to ask an 18-year-old to be, mature about this, because they're invested in this relationship, and they, particularly if it's their first love. But just to kind of step back, and as I told my daughter yesterday, stop for a minute, take a deep breath. Think about what he said, what you said, and think about how you can ratchet it down. But, you know, I also think that we do need to send a message. I hate to say that Chris Brown and Rihanna, you know, have to conform their behavior to what we need as opposed to what they need.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that Chris Brown, again, needs to be punished. And you know, what I would love to see is him plead guilty and take some punishment and some time in jail and become
some counseling,
definitely some counseling, some mm-hmm. anger management, and set kind of an example for other young men who may be conflicted about this. And I do think there's a message is going to come out of this one way or the other.
Well, yes, absolutely. It will be a symbol of something. It is already, and its resolution will be watched really closely. I'm so grateful to all of you for being with us this hour. Sandy Banks at the Los Angeles Times, columnist there. Sandy, you're terrific. Thank you very much. Good luck with your daughters.
Thank you.
Candace Hopkins at Love is Respect in Austin, Texas. Thank you for joining us, Candace.
Thank you for having me.
And Lisa Hartwick with me here in the studio. Thanks so much for coming in, Lisa.
You're welcome, Tom. Thanks.
We'll go out with Rihanna's big 2006 hit, S.O.S. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.